recordings are started. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. Would you like me to do a roll call for you, Chris?
Yes, please. Yes.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the translation and transliteration of contact information PDP working group on the 26th of February. On the call, on the Adobe Connect, actually, we have Amar El-Sadar, Howard Lee, Jennifer Chan, Pitinan Kormopatan, excuse me for the pronunciation, Roger Carney, Rudy van Smit, Sarah Bocky, Uboy Tip Sekaset, and Wanawit Akaputra. And for staff, we have Lars Hoffman, Gisela Gruber, and myself, Glenn de Saint-Gerie. Have I left anyone off, perhaps, who has joined on the phone only? If not, may I just remind you, please, to say your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and then it is over to you. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thank you very much. Now, I had two apologies, one some time ago from Emily Taylor, and then I think yesterday one from Peter Dernbach. Okay, so I'm very relieved that we can run this call today because we were able to get through almost half of the review tool in Singapore, but there, there are still lots of things that we need to pay attention to, and I would guess that we may not be able to finish this in 1 hour. There really is quite a lot of stuff, but let's just see how it goes. So. As I was saying, we're going to pick up in line 42 of the spreadsheet, so I'll drive down there in a moment. But before I do so, I've just realized I've forgotten to do the obligatory agenda point, which is the statements of interest. So I need to ask you whether your statement of interest has changed since the last call. Okay, so hearing nothing and seeing nothing, I think that's the green light to proceed. And as I say, I'll just go. Oh yeah, before I go down to number 42, I would like to just ask anybody, because obviously we're going to spend, I think, the majority of the time between number 42 and the end of the spreadsheet, but if there is stuff that people would like to go back to, because the Singapore meeting happened very early in the morning, and it's not always the best thing to. It's not always the best time to be dealing with quite complicated arguments. And so, if somebody wants to go back to something, that is absolutely fine. So it wouldn't be at all surprised. So anyway, I shall head off, and I'm just going to wind down to number 42. But before I do so, I'll just ask Amar, would you like to ask something?
Thanks, Chris. This is Amar. I would just like to ask that the review tool be updated to reflect the discussions we've already had. I think that would help us move forward. Unless I missed it, we didn't receive an updated review tool over email, and right now I can't scroll through what we're seeing on the AC or the Adobe Connect room, the chat window. But it just seems that we just have one comment in the first row, so I think updating it would be helpful. Thanks.
Thank you, Amar. I'm pretty sure there has been an update. And it may be that it's in the wiki as usual, as you would expect, but actually I'm wondering, did we forget to circulate it? We may just have done, for which apologies. I mean, as I was saying earlier, I do think it's unlikely that we're going to get through this today. So all it means is that on next week's call, we can pay particular attention to any differences between the two versions. All right. And certainly what we're looking at is, I believe it's the updated version. I'll know when I get there, because if I tell the truth, I'm actually still using a slightly old version, so I'll be able to tell, because I've got all my notes on that, so I should be able to tell whether it's updated. This is actually version 4.1. That's slightly different from the one I put in the wiki. The one in the wiki is version 4. I don't know, Lars, do you remember, are the major differences between those two versions?
This is Lars. Thank you, Chris. I believe this is version 4. I just renamed it for the purpose of the AC room. There was an overlap with my computer, so it's the same version as.
Okay, right. As I was saying, we can pick up any smaller differences next week, perhaps, because I think we'll be doing very well to finish this today. Right. In which case, and if there are no urgent things about any of the lines before line 42, I am intending to start there at number 42. And actually, quite a few of these comments in this part of the spreadsheet are fairly similar, but there are one or two people who are newish to the working group today, so. So that it might be quite useful to spend perhaps a little more time than we would normally do because of that. So anyway, number 42. So we've got the BC supports business constituency supports mandatory transformation and does therefore not consider the issue moot. We believe the cost should be treated as part of the regular cost of doing business for the parties collecting and maintaining the information. So this is registries, registrars, and resellers. Okay, so that as such is not particularly new as an opinion, but I think when we weren't sure whether something was new or not, we tended to give it presume that it might be new. And I think the general background to this is that those supporting mandatory transformation do tend to regard the cost effectively as being part of the of doing business, and so they tend to fall on registrars and on others. But those who believe that transformation should not happen, believe that the charges should be picked up by the community and only done if necessary. And later on today, in discussing quite a few of the comments we haven't really spoken about yet, I think one thing that's going to come up is the difference between transforming absolutely everything in the database and just transforming ad hoc, so when needed. And that's actually something that we haven't spent much time talking about, but it comes up as we go through several of the comments today, I think. Okay, so unless there's anything else about number 42, I suggest we go down and we get quite a few lines down after that. Down to round about 46. Right. So. 46. Now, there are one or two comments, possibly taking them slightly out of context, but contactability of registrants is always guaranteed by the presence of the email address data. No, I really don't think it is, because you know, we don't know that the data, well, depending on what sort of validation has happened, we don't know whether the address works for a start. But the other really big issue is, you know, are the people who are emailing, are they actually able to share some language? So if they can't, then that really blows this one out of the water. Now, I didn't see whose hand it went up first. It may have been Amr. Would you like to pick that up?
Thanks, Chris. This is Amr. Yeah, I would just like to point out that what I believe Key Systems is trying to say here is registrants are contactable by their email addresses, and this is guaranteed because there's sort of a check system. While registrants are registering domain names, they have to confirm their contactability. So when a registrant creates an account on a registrar's website and asks to register a specific domain name, they're required to provide an email address. The registrar will then verify that this email address is working by sending a message asking the registrant to respond to this message to verify that this is a working email address that he or she or it can be contacted at. And so this is what guarantees contactability. But this does not guarantee that the registrant will respond to every email that he, she, or it receives from someone trying to contact them through their contact data in the Whois. But it just does guarantee is that they are contactable, but there is no guarantee that they will respond. So that's just my 2 cents on this.
Thank you very much for that. Lars, would you like to add something to that?
This is Chris. This is Lars. Thank you, Chris. I think Anna is absolutely correct. I'd just like to add, I think what they also had in mind, I believe, is that regardless of the script that is used, because of the at sign, people can easily detect what the email address is. And then if we have machine-readable data, it would then be fairly easy to copy and paste the email address into an email, in fact, and contact them this way without having to know what, you know, the name or the street address necessarily is.
Thank you very much for that. Yes, I mean, the copy and paste argument comes up a few times later as well, and it has in fact already come up, that as long as the data are machine readable, even if you can't understand what they're saying, you can still copy it and use it for searching and various purposes. I'm just checking, Jim Galvin is typing a few things in the chat room. Okay, which is just backing up what we're saying, so good. Unless anything else about that, I think we get to go down to number 49. Now, number 49 is quite a complicated comment, so we'll just try and unpick it as we do it. So, report would benefit from addressing the question of cost-benefit evaluation of transforming contact data such as... Okay, well, first of all, actually there was a feasibility study that started to address those issues, and you know, we are aware of what they were saying, so actually probably it means we need to refer more to the... To the feasibility study. Various aspects here. Mandatory transformation would require additional data fields that would need to be added to each registry database and supported by every accredited registrar, especially problematic in underserved regions. Yes, I mean, if transformation is going to take part in this database, then the fields for the data would be needed, and also tag fields would be needed. So I think at an earlier stage, I always said, tag fields, probably all you have to do is say these data are Japanese, and that's the end of the story. Thinking about it at greater length, and this is something we spoke about in Singapore, very quickly from a logical, just from the point of view of logic, one realizes that actually isn't true, that we're not talking about saying these contact data are Japanese. We might be saying, we've got a Russian guy who lives in Tokyo at a Japanese address, and so theoretically you could have different languages within the contact information, and so that means that more than one tag is going to be necessary, and obviously that could have some effect on the complexity of the database. So that's that bit of it. One is concerned about anything that is adding costs to registrars and registrars in underserved regions. I mean, that's something we've spoken about on several occasions in the past. But before I go on, Amrit, would you like to pick up something there?
Thanks, Chris. This is Amr again. Just on the tagging of the data fields, just to repeat something I believe I said in Singapore, is that maybe when addressing these issues, because we did discuss them and we did come to some conclusions that there may be potential benefits in following those, and that's why we included them as potential recommendations in the initial report. But following some of the advice that we received on this in the public comment period, which I think is quite good advice, actually, maybe we should defer these questions to other PDP working groups that are chartered to look into them into more detail and ask them. So maybe we might want to modify our recommendations as such. And we could do this. We could, for example, ask that the issue report for the post EWG PDP is required to address these issues, or just include them in the issues to be scoped in their discussions, and that way they could be charted to deal with them appropriately and have sort of the time and the focus to do this more than we did. And that way maybe we could also limit our concrete recommendations on the charter questions that we were chartered to answer. So that's just my thought on this and a few of the other recommendations we've made as well. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I think that may well be very, very good advice. It's so difficult it is actually very difficult to separate policy and actually how you would do it, because sometimes I think it can happen that people talk about policy without realizing that what they're talking about is extremely difficult or impossible to implement. So quite a major issue. But yeah, I think that I'm certainly very, very happy with that sort of approach. So what we need to do is to say that we believe the data should be tagged, but exactly how that is done we leave to people actually implementing things. Okay, now we have a proportion of domain name subject to a law enforcement query or brand protection intervention is extremely low, approximately 0.1%. UDRP intervention is even lower. So this is one of the comments that brings up the issue of, to what extent are we, should we be talking about problems which already exist, and to what extent should we be talking about problems that could exist theoretically? And so what this comment is saying is that actually, at the moment, these things are really rare. We just don't know to what extent these things could become more common. So that's certainly one side of this. Okay. Then and then the last point, transformation would not be proportionate to the expected benefit. This is actually something we've heard many times before. We know about that. So I think there's not too much point in saying much about that. All right. Before we go further down, any more questions about that, or shall we perhaps move to the next one? Okay. Number 50, will there be rules or standards governing translation of, or basically transformation, so that it can be done programmatically? Oh, goodness. Will a common system be used, or are we all just relying on free services like Google Translate? Okay. Where to begin? So, you see, Google Translate will work really well. The more I think about it, the less well it works. But Google Translate works better with some languages than others. So some languages, Google Translate is really horrible, and it's actually pretty useless. And you know, certainly if you're learning Yiddish, which I am, they actually say, you know, people actually say to me, do not use Google Translate, it's terrible. Other languages, the quality is far better, and it really depends just which language it is, how big the database is, how long it's been going, all of those things. Rules or standards governing translation. Translation, anyway, we would imagine would be a marginal activity. So, again, this is the difference between policy and actually doing it, but we think that probably most of the time translation will be the important thing, and there may not be very much translation. So transliteration will be the important activity, and we're not expecting a lot of translation. So as regards transliteration, that is very much stuff that has to be done with standards, and the smaller the number of actors doing it is, the smaller the number of those people doing transliteration, the better, because the more people you have doing it, the more possibilities you have for it to be done in different ways. Yes, with some languages, it's also possible to get pretty good automatic transliteration. With others, it's very difficult. I'll just give an example and say I have transliterated a lot of Mandarin Chinese recently. It's really hard. So if you want to know how hard transliterating Mandarin is, you know, I can speak to you about this for a long time. I've had a rough time doing that. Anyway, quite a lot going on in the chat room, so I'll just pause for a moment and just check that there's nothing I should be picking up. Right, so yes, so apparently other people trying to shift the cost to some easy-to-use automated solution. This is, it's really very, the only word to use is naive, because, as I say, these problems get worse the more solutions, if you have one solution to one of these problems, then, maybe that's, that could be pretty good. If you have everybody doing it on a volunteer basis in thousands, millions of different ways, this is a sort of nightmare. And as a linguist, this is where I really have to ring the alarm bell and say, please do not do that, because you will end up with data which is of a very poor quality. It will not be accurate. It will not be consistent. It will be pretty useless, actually. So, this is, as you can probably tell, this is something, and I don't feel strongly about very many things, but this, really. Okay, and more, just back to the chat room for a moment. Okay. Yes. Okay. And Rudy's picking up the quality aspect of this. Yes. There are free tools, but without any guarantee. Yes. And Amar is saying he thinks it's out of scope. Right. And yeah, this is a good point. So actually, we should really be talking about whether it's desirable. And not so much how to do it, but I think effectively there is a bit of a connection here, because if we are recommending people to do something in the knowledge that it will cause chaos and that it's practically impossible, then that does affect our decision about whether we want to recommend that or not. It really does. Okay, and now Pitinan is agreeing, and Jim and Pitinan are agreeing with Amar. Yeah, okay. I think it is it's very easy to remember that we are only here to say, is it desirable or not. And then Pitinan is making an interesting distinction between the various meanings of the English word burden. So burden could be cost, but it's also liability, so that's something that's quite easy to forget. Yeah, both of those, yeah. And Rudy is agreeing with that, and Jim then is saying, he's saying that the registrars and registries are talking about the feasibility of doing it, which is mostly out of scope for us, and then Amma has come back to me and said that limiting our answer to why... Yeah, okay. So, yes, that's right. So when we give the answer, we really need to say desirable or not. Probably not all that much more, and we shouldn't get too much into the nastier parts of it. Okay. I'll just double-check that there's nothing else in here that we need to consider before moving on. Will there be rules that we can do programmatically? I've said it all, really. Fundamentally, if this is to work properly, it probably can't be done automatically. I think that's one side of it. And if it is going to be done manually, then it needs to be done by a small group of people as possible. And then, Jim comes up with a characteristic of desirable is whether or not it's feasible. Yeah, so there's no escaping this, is there? Good. And Emma is agreeing. And Jim is then saying that's the level at which we get to speak to the question of how. I really hope that... that whatever happens after this PDP, that we are involved in future work here, both with the policy and actually with doing it, because I think it's impossible to do this work without getting really interested in it and actually quite passionate about it as well. So, I've rather laboured that point, but I think it's really important stuff. We then perhaps go down further to number 51, and then we've... if translation cannot be automated and human judgment is required, who is responsible for doing it? I think to some extent this has come out before, but I think the idea would be registrant, but then theoretically the registrar would have to be able to check it, and later on that comes up as another question, what happens if they can't check it? Some of these questions are are really, really hard to answer. There's at least one of them that I really haven't been able to answer at all. So, okay, I think Amar got in there first. Amar, would you like to pick something up?
Thanks, Chris. This is Amar. Yeah, just on this question number 51. Who is responsible for doing it? I believe the IPC also hinted towards or asked us to sort of answer this question as well, when in fact what this PDP is chartered to answer is who should decide who should be responsible for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So if we focus on that instead of actually saying who is responsible. So, for example, you could say the registrar is responsible to decide whether they're going to do it or they're going to ask the registrants to do it or whether they're going to leave it up to the registries to do it later. Or we could say, or the registrant is responsible for deciding who will do it by opting to do it himself or herself or just deciding not to do it and leaving it up to the registrars or registries at a later point. That's, of course, in the end that we do recommend that it is desirable to transform contact data or not. So if we're responding to this question specifically, both here for the registrars and registries as well as the IPC, then we would say, well, we're not going to answer this question of who's responsible for doing it. We're only going to answer the question on who we think should make that decision.
Thank you very much. That makes huge sense. Yes, and then the idea that perhaps the registrar would make the decision, and you know, you would imagine in a lot of cases that they may decide that the registrant has the responsibility. But anyway. Rudy, would you like to pick up something here?
Yes, thank you, Chris. Rudy, for the transcript. I think it's quite important to keep in mind, and especially in Europe as the debate is going on here on the data privacy again, that the contact information, the owner of the information is the registrant at the end. So I'm wondering if we can allow that the third party would verify and change the value of the data that the registrant has been entering. I think that with regards to the European data privacy law, that would be a strong objection to it. So I think we need to keep in mind that the only owner of the contact information is the registrant. So I'm wondering how we could say who is responsible other than registrant.
Thank you very much for that. This is it just adds another element of complexity to the whole thing. I mean, certainly there are linked questions. As soon as transformation becomes mandatory, it just seems to be extremely difficult questions like this, and in certain connotations, you know, the law will stop some possible solutions. Now, if I just have a look, Putinan is typing something. And this is then about validity. Yeah, translation will need people at least for many years. Yes, that's basically one of the things I was trying to say a bit earlier. Transformed address needs to be agreed by the data owner, registrant. That's basically what Rudy was saying. Yeah, Sarah is agreeing with Rudy, and so is Pitinam. And then the focus on who should decide. Yeah, okay. And Rudy then has a comment saying, this is something we need to put perhaps towards the beginning of the report. Uh, Now, some of these other questions are pretty close to what we've been talking about, so I think there is a little bit of stuff going on in the chat room, but I think I'm going to just keep on going in the hope of making as much progress as we can. So if we then go to 52, I think 52 was actually the question where I really got very stuck. Okay, so if the registrant is responsible for providing translated data, what if they don't know what it should be? The most likely actor to know what the data should be, it is the registrant. Basically what we're saying is, do you know your address in your own language? You know, the overwhelming likelihood is yes, but I guess if we there certainly could be situations with people living in countries and having to provide contact data in languages they're not familiar with. This does come up. Okay. So I'll lurk here just for a moment, hoping that somebody may shine a bit of light on this one. I think this was the darkest part of the document. I just most of the time, you can remember something from a previous call that may help, but this one it's really tough. Okay, let's just keep on edging down and just see how much progress we can make. And then we get to 53, which actually again is related. What if a third party disputes the accuracy of a transliteration? It's very, very difficult to separate policy and practice here. I mean, if you've got a system where you've got a standard transliteration which is carried out by not too many bodies and it is pretty standard, well, actually these disputes, effectively most of the time the people running the standard are going to say yes, that meets the standard, or no, that doesn't. So that is the joy of having the standard. It's just really it connects with what I was saying earlier. And there are concrete suggestions for doing that further down. So perhaps I'll hold fire until we actually look at the concrete suggestions. In fact, Pity Nan is saying something. I start to think it's really no point transforming, because if we need it unofficially, then it could be easily transformed by free tool without guarantee. In a lot of cases, true, yeah. And if we need it officially, then we need the validated one. Absolutely. In whatever language. And you see, this is when I was talking about, would the whole database be transformed? This nightmare task, a huge amount of work, or could it be done ad hoc? And something's just fallen off my desk. That's what the crash was. So here, this is really backing up the sort of idea that what you might want is to have an organization that would do ad hoc transformations, or if that was the case, you'd then be able to keep the consistency. But for some purposes, just using free things might work. So it really depends how important is it to get it right. Amma is saying, he got disconnected, but wanted to support what Rudy was saying about, I think, about sort of putting something about the who should decide at the beginning of the report, which is a really good point. if a policy recommendation, we may require contracted parties to send registrant contact data to third parties. Conflicts with some local privacy laws, this might prove problematic. Another good reason why transformation may be undesirable. Oh my goodness, yeah, okay. Although I think the definition of send is quite interesting there, because you would imagine that, it's not so much sending, it's more sort of having some person, giving some organization the rights to view data. What we're saying is that if it were a situation where the quality of the data were important, then you might have to let some third party have a look at them to make sure that they're transformed according to the standards, and that could have data privacy connections. So that is a wonderful point which I don't think has come up before now. Whereas, as Pityanan was saying earlier, if the quality of this data doesn't matter too much, then you might, in the case of some languages, be able to get a free tool to do some of it. So, data privacy. Okay, that's really interesting. And Amma is coming in with a couple of things here. With one thing here. Sending could also mean cross-border transfer of data from jurisdictions with high data privacy laws to ones with, this is really something where we need expert help. I think very often. Point taken. So what's going to happen is that you're not going to need to give people electronic access. What you're going to be doing is just showing them something and saying, is this correctly transliterated? But there are certainly huge data privacy aspects to that. And Amma is pointing out, Pityanan's agreeing with Amma, and Amma is pointing out that it's an ongoing issue with the implementation of the SIC Who Is policy. Okay, yeah. So I think you've got the sort of nightmare situation here where, there may be certain situations where you're legally allowed to do that and other situations where you cannot legally do it. And a horrendous matrix of when you can and when you can't. That's how I understand that. Amma is pointing out that there's an ongoing legal review being performed. So all of this, there is a slight risk that we could be recommending stuff that isn't actually legally possible in some parts of the world, if we're not careful. So that's something we really need to bear in mind. All right. And a very interesting point, which I don't think we've spoken about very much before today, and slightly got lost. We're in the low 50s, aren't we? Here we go. 54. So, again, a lot of these things are quite closely related. Is the registrant's consent required before a transliteration is published in the Who Is? Yes. I would say so. I would imagine so. And can they withhold consent? I would say no, because, I'm presuming that's consent to the transliteration. And the reason I say no is that, this transliteration should be happening according to a standard. So, the standard is not going to produce bizarre things. Fundamentally, the standard should work. Not totally sure that's what withhold consent means, but presuming it is, then that would be what I would suggest. Okay, no, AMA is actually picking that up and saying that the withholding consent could be publication of the transform data. Okay, I don't know the answer to that. I just regard it as a technical legal thing. I would imagine that it might be possible because certainly in the UK we're quite used to having situations where we don't have to give our addresses or our names or permission to photograph us. So it wouldn't surprise me at all if there were jurisdictions where it would be fine to refuse to do some of these things, it does add a layer of complexity. And then AMA is saying this is another policy question that needs to be answered, but not by this PDP. Yes, I couldn't agree more. We I'm really just guessing when it comes to this. Okay, so that's 54. What if a registrant wants to change an approved transliteration? Right, okay. Well, we're really hoping that transliteration has been produced by a standard. Now, obviously, there would be the other, there might be other situations where transliterations are just done very ad hoc and it doesn't matter too much, and, this doesn't really apply then. But actually, normally, because if it is the situation where a standard would be were being used, then the short answer is that it wouldn't be possible to change it because the standard is just going to do it right. So, I think that would be a suggestion. Amar, would you like to pick that up?
Thanks, Chris. This is Amar. I just wanted to throw in a snarky remark here and say that I think the registrars and registries are just throwing these questions at us to try to point out the vast complexities involved in a policy requiring transformation to make it seem as unappealing as possible, and I couldn't agree more with them. So just wanted to say that. Thanks.
Thank you, Amar. Yes, I mean, certainly when I first started looking at this document, I actually wrote in the margin non-mandatory arguments. I mean, they really are, and they're pretty powerful because trying to answer these questions is murderous, really quite difficult stuff. Now, Rudy is just mentioning, refers back to the previous points, and if today the who is the change, there are also updates done. Not quite got that, my brain stopped working. Refers back to the previous, so he thinks 55 refers back to the previous point, and if today the who is the change, there are also updates done. Sorry, I can't understand it, Rudy, could you, thank you.
Yes, Chris, really for the transcript. Well, all the elements that are put on in the comments from registrar context are pointing to what I would call the responsibility of registries and registrars.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot add to what actually is in the agreements defined as being their responsibility. It's almost impossible to go above that responsibility. So where they are putting the questions about, for instance, the WHOIS verification, well, when today there is an update of the domain name in the WHOIS, there is automatically a verification that takes place anyway in order to be able to assure that things are consistent. So that's nothing new. What I feel is that they are bringing a lot of arguments that indicate us that, in fact, based on what they have as responsibility today, Well, we cannot add on top of that many of the responsibilities that are in fact not theirs. I think that's the argumentation that I feel here, and eventually if somebody from registrars is present, it would be good to bring up what's the concern from their side, especially is with regards to the points, I would say 53 to 61, 62 even.
Yes, I mean, certainly there are a lot of very interesting arguments here, and I would agree with you. It would be really nice to make sure that we are actually understanding them correctly. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Right, so. Moving down, again, just to make progress, Albert, I'll just pick up Anna's comment before I do so. Technically, we could add to their responsibilities, but they obviously don't want us to. Yeah, well, that's understandable. I don't want us to either, in the absence of good reasons why we should. Absolutely. 56, he says doggedly to make some progress. Is a verification required every time one of these transliterated fields are updated? Yes. I think that's a simple answer. I can't imagine the answer to that would be no. Amr.
Hi, Chris. This is Amr again. I would actually disagree with you on this point.
Okay.
Say that verification is not required with transformation, whether it's translation or transliteration, because if the authoritative form of the contact data is the data provided in the local script, then it's that data that needs to be verified, not the transformed data. So verification would not be required either initially or upon updates of transformed data. Thanks.
Thank you, Amr. Yes, so basically... It depends, I suppose, on the model that they're using, and one hopes that that is the model that they would use with the original data being the sort of master version. But I guess I was vaguely thinking in my head that that there may be some fuzzier model than that, in which case it gets. You know, it does get if they're wanting to verify both sides, then that would get extremely messy. Okay, And Jim is saying that the change needs to be logged and tracked. Yes. Okay. Yeah, and Jim is making the point that validating the transformation is reasonable. Yes. But that's a different thing than what's being referred to here. Yes, okay. Yes. Okay. I mean, I think certainly it would seem to be extremely undesirable to be having to verify every time some minor change were made. I mean, I guess if the address changes completely, that's a different matter. I mean, that's another issue that. As addresses change, it would be necessary if mandatory transformation were to come in to keep the original data and the transformed data connected. Obviously the same address, not sort of old address in the transformed form. Okay, Amr, would you like to pick something up?
Yes, Chris. Thanks. This is Amr again. I just wanted to point out that the purpose of verifying contact data is to make sure that registrants are contactable in the event that contact becomes necessary. So if registrants are contactable in the original contact data they provide and this is verified, then it becomes unnecessary to verify whether they are contactable using the transformed data or not. I raised my hand before Jim put his last note in the chat, but I'd also like to add something to that in saying that validation of contact data, which I believe is sort of just making sure that this data is real data. For example, it's making sure that the physical address provided, that this street number exists on this street, which it does actually, in fact, exist in this city. I believe there are several complexities surrounding doing this, even in Latin script, because there's simply no practical way to validate all contact data around the world. And this might even be more complex if we're going to recommend or suggest that validation of transformed contact data should be mandatory as well. This might prove to be an impossible task to perform under any circumstances. So we should probably consider that as well. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm aware, incidentally, that we are we've really timed out, but I'll just pick up a few things in the chat room before we finish. And there are also other ICANN calls this afternoon, which people may be wanting to attend. So Jim is saying validating the transformation is reasonable. Oh yeah, sorry, we've done that one. And then Pitinan is saying only if there is some standard way of transforming. Yeah, well, that needs to be the case. Yes. Reasonable topic for discussion. not what I meant was reasonable to do. Yeah. Okay. Very briefly, any final comments before we end? Just ask for any other business very briefly as well. All right. Well, thank you very much for today's call. As expected, we didn't get to the end of the spreadsheet, but we can pick up where we left off next week and on the mailing list before then, in fact. So thanks, and see you at the same time next week. Goodbye.
Thanks, Chris. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
And that concludes today's conference. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.